Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fode, and this Best of Authors on Tour podcast was recorded live at the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute. It's time to begin.
When I speak in public about my many areas of my expertise, the area that most people are interested in, of course, is the hobo matters. Jonathan and I had this plan to screen for you a PBS-style documentary that we were making about the hobos, the wandering folk of the Great Depression who hopped boxcars, etc., wore the same pants every day. You understand who I'm talking about. Bearded folk, usually. And it was going to be a great documentary. It was going to be like a Ken Burns documentary. It would have an old-time picture of a hobo, black and white, naturally. And I would do some narration, and Jonathan would play some annoying folk songs, and the camera would pan slowly over the hobo this way, and then more narration, and we would pan back over the hobo this way, more annoying folk songs, and then we'd do a slow zoom in and fade out. It would just be one photo of one hobo for the entire documentary. It was going to be an extremely cost-effective documentary. Because we did not have many funds to begin with. But as you know, the estates of the various most famous hobos are quite litigious and protective of their image, and we could not get the rights to the particular hobo image we wanted, or indeed any hobo image. Most hobos, it turns out, did not show up on film, curiously enough. So that also proved to be something of a challenge. So unfortunately, we were unable to proceed with our documentary and can only now present to you the skeletal approximation of what it would have sounded like and sounded like as I present to you now the hobo matters. Are you ready, Jonathan?
Yes, I'm ready.
Very good. And here I shall read from my book. They called it the war to end all wars. They called it the London fire. And they called it the Trail of Tears. But they were all wrong. It was called the Great Depression. And the hobos saw it coming. 1929, October, Black Thursday, the 24th day of October, 1929. The day the stock market crashed, instantly wiping out $30 billion in value. Soon after, the Bank of the United States would collapse, trapping all inside. Many of them orphans. After a decade of high-flying prosperity, the economy of the United States fell to earth and then began tunneling to an awful volcanic core of despair, food riots, annoying folk songs, and lava. By March, 250,000 apple sellers would crowd the streets of Manhattan, desperately refusing to sell any other kind of fruit. But apples and sellers alike were easy picking for the hobos. There have been hobos in the United States since there have been trains and liquor, which is to say, always. But by 1930, an estimated 2 million broken souls had taken to the wandering life, hopping boxcars, picking up work where they could find it, and drinking, drinking, drinking. In many ways, they were a nation unto themselves. They had their own currency in the form of hobo nickels, regular buffalo nickels that they would deface with a penknife to carve in new images on it and then pass on for goods or services, or attempt to pass it on anyway. So a buffalo nickel, for example, might be recarved to look like a hobo dressed as a buffalo. They had other little handicrafts of their own, lint knitting. They were very into lint knitting. They would go from town to town. They would take the pills off of sweaters that were hanging out on clotheslines and knit them into new sweaters and then attempt to sell them back to the original owners. They're very crafty, the hobos, very sly. And, of course, they had their own language of signs and scrawls and hieroglyphics that they used to alert to passing brethren to danger and opportunity. They would scrawl these things on barn sides or on picket fences and a cross, for example, on a house would mean to another hobo that religious talk would get you a free meal there. Or a stick figure of a woman with three triangles would mean a woman lives here alone with her children. Or alternately, a woman lives here who's very fond of triangles. Three stars, of course, meant beware. The sheriff in this town is handy with throwing stars. And then, of course, there's a famous one, which I'm sure you all recognize. This was referred to as the H in sun rays, and in 1932 it was seen on one day throughout the United States. And boxcars, picket fences, carved into mashed potatoes at diners, chalked on the back of policemen's uniforms, stomped in gigantic proportion into cornfields so as to be seen by above, from above, by whom it is unknown. And this H in sun rays, of course, meant that it was time for the hobos to take over the United States government. When in the spring of 1932, great masses of unemployed veterans descended upon Washington to urge the passing of the bonus bill, the hobos came with them. They took advantage of the confusion to infiltrate the White House, pocketing sandwiches and replacing Secretary of the Treasury Ogden Mills with one of their own, Hobo Joe Junkpan. Was the only Secretary of the Treasury who was a hobo in our history. His term lasted about 2 weeks, and he was chased out by Hoover's pneumatic militia. But some of his amazing innovations are still with us today, such as the repeal of the bindlestick tax. This is why your bindlestick is not taxed. If you have a lake of moonshine on your property, say, or cigarette trees, also, no tax. Unfortunately, his most sweeping innovation and most interesting was his plan to allow all Americans to make their own nickels out of anything they wished. Wood, lint, he recommended lint very highly. But this was dismissed as so much hobo nonsense and was never enacted, although economists now agree that had it been enacted, it would have wiped out the Great Depression just like that. While they were in power, the hobos wrote illiterate letters to newspapers. They wanted cheap beer and warm hats. They wanted bent nails and pieces of string. They demanded half barrels of swallow feather sauce, and no one knew what they were talking about. At his inauguration in 1933, a new crippled president named Roosevelt addressed the nervous crowd. He promised a new deal against the hobos. "The people of the United States have not failed," he said. "In their need, they have registered a mandate that they want direct, vigorous action. And so, I will kill all the hobos, and together we will gnaw on their bones." The president knew there was really only one way to end the hobos' march across the blighted land. Polio. Alone in his secret fireside lab, Roosevelt created a concentrated serum of the dreaded disease that would be placed in the nation's water supply by the Tennessee Valley Authority. According to his contemporaries, Roosevelt was tortured by his decision. He knew that a certain number of non-hobo citizens would spend the rest of their lives in iron lungs, non-recreationally, as a result of his actions. But it would finally put a stop to the wandering people, starting at their feet and ending at their waists. Then came Pearl Harbor. Some say Roosevelt knew the Japanese would attack that infamous December 7th. The truth is he didn't, but the hobos did. And as quickly as they had come, after Pearl Harbor, the hobos mysteriously disappeared. No one knows precisely where they went or why. Some say they found patriotism in their hearts, joining the war against our common enemy, Europe. Others say that they went to the stars or to another dimension. And still others say that they live on today, moving quietly from town to town, preparing for the time when their great chicken bone and moonshine empire will rise again. Is it possible? No. Most serious historians agree they probably went to the stars. But if you live near a railway track and listen as the train passes, it is almost as if you can still hear them singing. The dark and lonely wind of history still blowing from their rotted lungs.
One evening as the sun went down and the jungle fires were burning, down the track came a hobo hiking, and he said, "Boys, I'm not turning. I'm headed for the land that's far away, beside the crystal fountain. I'll see you all this coming fall in the Big Rock Candy Mountain."
This song, of course, is the Big Rock Candy Mountain. Many of you will probably recognize it as a kid's song. It's used in a lot of movies and fast food franchise television commercials in a lot of different forms. It's a famous American folk song, but it's not a kid's song. It's an old hobo song originally, describing the great hobo Valhalla, known as the Big Rock Candy Mountain, where all hobos hoped to go when they stopped wandering after all. It would be a place full of cigarette trees and handout trees and lint trees. A place where there would be lakes of moonshine and rivers of gin and wells of whiskey and rain of scotch, which is a kind of whiskey. You see what I'm getting at. They loved the spirits. Especially if they could drink it out of the ground. And so, you know, when you listen to this song, that's what this is describing. And I'm sorry, Jonathan, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just wanted to give that context. So please continue.
Thanks, John. In the Big Rock Candy Mountain, there's a land that's fair and bright, and the handouts grow on bushes, and you sleep out every night. The boxcars are all empty, and the sun shines every day on the birds and the bees and the cigarette trees. The lemonade springs where the bluebird sings in the Big Rock Candy Mountain.
Sorry, I have to interrupt one more time. I apologize, but when you sang lemonade springs, it got me to thinking. You might think that's odd. Lemonade is not intoxicating. Why would the hobos want it? Well, in a way, it's ironic that this song came to be known as a kid's song. Because, in fact, some folklorists believe that it was written for kids. And this is a rather dark, actual, true fact that I discovered when I accidentally did some research for my book. And I actually did regret it more than usual, having done the research, because what I learned was that, as I say, folklorists know that most hobos would go from town to town, and they would hope to lure kids along with them, young teenagers, what they would call rogue kids, usually young men, to do their begging for them and to do work for them and to do other things for them. And so these folklorists believe that this song, as I say, is sort of a Pied Piper-type song to describe things that children love, such as lemonade and cigarette trees, to bring them along on the road. You don't hear these lyrics very much anymore these days. It was all cleaned up by Burl Ives. But, in fact, we found some of the original lyrics that we're going to sing for you. Well, Jonathan will sing for you now. And if you listen closely to the original lyrics of Big Rock Candy Mountain, I think you'll hear they tell a somewhat darker story. Go ahead, Jonathan.
In the Big Rock Candy Mountain, you never change your socks, and little streams of alcohol come trickling down the rocks. So your socks get good and stinky, and you're always good and drunk. It's the bestest time that you ever had. You won't miss your friends or your mom and dad in the Big Rock Candy Mountain. In the Big Rock Candy Mountain, there's a hole that's full of treats, and the rock salt tastes like sugar drops, and the dirt is nice and sweet. You can eat some as you work the mines to bring me precious gems. There's a hobo shed and some paint made of lead. You know you're done a painting when you wake up dead in the Big Rock Candy Mountain. I love the tender crisp bacon cheddar ranch. The breasts there grow on trees, and streams of bacon ranch dressing flow right up to your knees. There's tumbleweeds of bacon, and cheddar paves the streets. You get to veg all day, all the lotto tickets paid. There's a king who wants you to have it your way at the Tender Crisp Bacon Cheddar Ranch. The Tender Crisp Bacon Cheddar Ranch.
Come and get it.
Thank you, Jonathan Colton, for singing that lovely song.
That's all for this Best of Authors on Tour podcast. I'm Darren Fode, and this podcast was recorded live at the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.